Good morning, everybody. I always say good morning because we record in the mornings, but good, whatever time of day it is, when you listen to us. We are Digital Hammurabi. You all know us. You're on our Patreon. I'm not entirely sure why I introduced myself, but there we go. And this is our Hammurabi Hangout. This is number, 18, which is pretty good going. I am not known for my consistency in posting. Josh honestly has really kept me on track for this, which is very much appreciated. He's a
and
good
guy. I am here, but I had to pull over on the side of the road and for a minute to look at something. So I've got my blinkers on. So I just didn't want you guys to have to hear that. I'll be back in a second.
Anyway, we have some things to talk to you about today. I'm going to start out with a debrief, I guess, of the Hit Points and History Conference, which was this weekend. It was really, really fun. I had a great time, and it looked like those who attended had a good time as well. I particularly enjoyed the after dark section of the conference, which is when we do actual games, historical inspired games. And I was originally just going to record and ended up joining in because it was just so much fun. But Samantha Supes, who is a PhD student from Chicago studying the ancient Near East, she ran a one-shot Dungeons and Dragons game. And it was so cool. She'd made character sheets for all the main characters in the game. I was Enkidu. We also had a Ninsun and a Shamhat. And Shamhat, I can't remember the name of the attack, but she had an insulting attack. And Samantha had gone through Sumerian texts and found actual Sumerian insults for the player to use. It was really cool. And because I was Enkidu, obviously I had the power to talk to animals. And there was one part where we had been asked by an innkeeper to get rid of some rats that were infesting her inn. And one of my attempts resulted in me turning myself, so I had a power of illusion, and also this talking to animals thing. I turned myself into, or I gave the illusion of being a king rat to try and persuade them that they should leave the city and come with us to the cedar forest instead, because I was going to try and ultimately overthrow the humans. Unfortunately, I rolled a two. I don't play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. I've played part of one campaign before and gave up because essentially I just didn't have the time to commit to it. But a two is not very high in terms of dice rolling, especially when you're rolling a 20-sided dice. So I failed that one. They saw through it and were, instead of being impressed by my regal bearing, absolutely terrified, and ended up running all over the tavern instead. So Ninsun had to blast them with an energy ball of some description. But that was quite comical.
During that part where you were running around, did anybody play Man on the Run? And if not, did they do that because you hadn't transitioned to your more human state yet?
Oh, no, this was post-Wildman phase.
Okay, it would have worked.
That. It would have worked. It really would.
Okay,
but
tight.
And then Lexi and Niel and I presented House of Ashes, which is a horror game, set in the ruins of an Akkadian Empire era temple, which was really cool. I don't typically like horror very much, but honestly, the backdrop for this game was enough to really keep me enthralled and entertained. And as you're playing through it, you find that an archaeological team have been in the temple. They all got eaten by vampire space aliens, but an archaeological team in World War One, I think, was in the temple and excavating it. So you come across all of their dig equipment, all of their cataloging equipment, their notebooks. Like, you can pick up their notebooks and read through them, which I really enjoyed for obvious reasons. But the temple itself has a pair of Lamassu, these giant protective deity, like man-headed lions with giant wings, had a pair of them just kind of standing out in the middle of the main temple, in the open, which, if you're familiar with the Lamassu, is very odd. They're usually placed, I mean, they're usually in palaces for starters, but they're usually placed either side of a doorway to stop malevolent spirits, people, deities from entering into the palace. So seeing them out in the center of a room was strange. But then I found one of the archaeological notebooks, and there's a note saying, these are usually in palaces, why are they in a temple? It was a lot of fun. So we didn't really play through it, but we went through some of the historical analysis. And EL talked about astrology and Babylonian science and the substitute king ritual. It was really fun. I had a great time. And then Sunday, the keynote speaker was excellent, and she was looking at why edutainment, so educational entertainment, specifically for children, seems to have dropped off in recent years, and trying to encourage people to make more educational games. So of course I came out with like 5 games that I now want to make, despite having zero background in gaming and really no fully formed plan. So there was a lot of food for thought there. Very enjoyable time. I believe Josh is now back with us.
Heck yes, I am. I do whatever I feel like I want to do. Gosh.
So that was my weekend. Josh, this wasn't really a weekend thing, but 11 days ago now, Derek from MythVision podcast uploaded Josh's deconversion story. Now, this was filmed last June.
Yeah.
When I was in the UK with the kids, Josh drove out to Washington State and spent a few days with Derek and did a bunch of filming. So this one's been in the works for a while, and it's been really nice to see it finally released. But it's up to 202,000 views.
Yeah.
Which is pretty damn good. And there are 3,684 comments, which is enough to terrify any YouTuber. In all honesty, I mean, there are a lot of pleasant people appreciating Josh sharing his story and saying, this was really impactful for me. Dr. Josh is an endlessly enjoyable person. I mean, I absolutely agree with that. But there are, of course, the as expected Christians who, well, you're just not a real Christian, Josh. Never were, never will be.
And it's interesting. I know Megan really loves reading through these comments, but in spite of that, you know, we don't have to read too many of them, but if you spend any time reading through them, you'll see. I gave a paper at ASOR last year, I think. And in it I said, online there are people that actually are excited about the coming apocalyptic violence. That God, this judgment that God is going to, exact this revenge that God is going to exact on behalf of His people. They get excited about it, and not excited in the sense of finally we'll get delivered. It's the, just you wait. Like that you're staring at your bully, knowing that, your older brother is coming, and you're like mocking him, ha ha, you're gonna get it. It's It's a bizarre, and like you would expect, people in this position, and then admittedly, some of them are making these kinds of comments, but more than you would expect, people are saying stuff like, "Man, you're gonna find out when that you feel how hot that fire is." Like, oh, okay. There's that love of Christ shining forth. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a delight. I did take a quick scroll through the comments and actually didn't find any mean ones yet.
Oh.
But yes. But there are several people saying your statement about being the nicest bigot anyone would ever meet really resonating with them.
Yeah. There are a
So.
lot of people like that.
Yes.
A lot of people like that. And that to me is encouraging. And
Yes.
it sounds like maybe it shouldn't be encouraging, but it is because, like, fundamentalism has this narrative that humanity, everybody is bad at their core, right?
Yeah.
And without these constraints, without these external forces, without God working, everybody would just be horrible, horrible all the time. And that doesn't seem to match reality for me because, again, having no scientific background, it still seems clear to me from an evolutionary standpoint that just wouldn't work. All right, we have to work together. And so I see a lot of people when you ask them about slavery, for example, nobody goes, "Yeah, slavery, rah," and then gets excited if they see that slavery's in the Old Testament. Yeah, I get to enslave people, right? Like, no, nobody really does that. They all have this like basic notion that it's a really shitty thing to do. And so, and I th and I think people have been trained in their communities. Now, I'm obviously outside of my field, so please forgive me, but just in my personal experience, it seems like people have been trained in their communities, in their social groups, to feel certain ways about certain groups, right? So, like, there's this immediate biological reaction, or whatever you want to call it, this sort of reaction to like members of the LGBTQ community, or people that are trans, or because it's the other, right? It's something that you've been told different is bad, right? I think it's probably similar to the reaction that people had 50 years ago, or 70 years ago, when there were interracial marriages or interracial relationships. Like, oh my goodness, that's not right. And I think the same is true with, when someone who's in a fundamentalist mindset has close contact with someone who's gay, for example. And I think that that's something that's been trained, right? They've and it's something that they can unlearn. And so I do think that I think it's really important to love those people and to love them, I don't want to say correctly. I mean, like I think there's this tendency, and I'll shut up, sorry. But like I think there's this tendency sometimes to go the other direction, And justifiably, I think, in many ways, right? To just hate everybody that's a bigot. And I think that if one has the social capital, if one has the capacity, in other words, that they're not a member of this, or they haven't been affected to the degree that it would, it would cost them their mental health, all kinds of factors. But like for me, I'm obviously not going to platform, in that way. Hey, come on my channel and, let me interview you about your bigoted views, right? Like, I'm not going to do that. But I think there are certain people that, like, I know that I see myself 15 years ago in them. And so I know what's possible. And so sort of behind the scenes, I try to work with them. Say, hey, that's not good what you're saying there and what you're doing there. Here's why. I understand why you're saying it. But I think that's something that maybe we write off too quickly. But anyway, sorry. That was quite a tangent.
I feel like this whole podcast audio, long audio message is supposed to be tangents.
Yeah.
Like this is the place where we can come and just share one of the things that are currently in our brains.
Hammurabi Tangents.
We should just rename it.
Yeah.
Hammurabi Tangents.
Yours is better.
It's just because I have this weird thing about alliteration. We had other things as well. I don't remember what they were now.
Well, you were going to read some comments, I think.
Right, but I couldn't find any negative ones.
Oh, newest, I think it's the...
Oh, God, okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that we could talk about something else.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just... I hate reading...
Yeah, it's fine.
People being mean to my husband.
Like, it's telling because I took 30 seconds and scrolled through a few of them last night. I thought, my gosh, like, I actually messaged Kip and Derek and said we should do a stream on this where we just read some of these comments and discuss the fundamentalist mindset behind them.
Guys, you haven't tasted the goodness of God. If you had, you would not be ascetics. I'm sure he means atheists.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was telling you that you need to let Jesus' Holy Spirit touch you in an intimate way. Which is concerning.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, obviously, I'm sure everybody listening knows that where these comments, that like the core of where these comments come from is fear.
Yeah.
Because just like any cult member, and I'm so sorry, I'm just speaking from my experience here. I don't have any training in cult behavior or anything like that, but it seems to me that if someone's in a cult and someone leaves that cult because they, like that monk episode, I love using monk and Seinfeld. And The Office. Like, these are my analogies. Where he gets brought into that cult. Right? Anybody that leaves the cult, there has to be a reason that they left. Right? Anybody that's still in the group, it can't be a good reason that they left. It can't be a rational reason that they left. Because... then why aren't you leaving?
I have an alternative viewpoint here, Josh. Comment. Is it possible that JHU is the spiritual territory of Satan? about it, because my son, who had a good grounded biblical faith prior to going to undergraduate study at JHU, seems to have diluted his avid faith walk with the Lord, question mark. No, it's because he's being taught how to think critically.
Yeah, that's the real rub there. But you hear it, right? We have this interpretive model, right? I mean, to get down to brass tacks, right? A fundamentalist has an interpretive framework. And the interpretive framework is the Bible is the inspired and errant word of God. And everything that it says is true. And the way that I'm interpreting it is the correct way. And because of that, when I read places like 1 John 2, I see that if anybody leaves the faith, they were never really part of it. Okay, well, there you go. So if that's true, and my interpretive model is true, well, Josh could not have really been a Christian. It's impossible, right? It's either that, or he still is a Christian. He's just backslidden, right? And he'll eventually come back. So you get that less frequently, but you'll get comments like that. But it has to be one or the other. It can't be that I genuinely did believe and now I genuinely don't. You can't have that. And so they have to posit possibilities, right? So you'll get things like, if you read through those, I had a head knowledge, right? But not a heart knowledge, whatever that means. I heard lots about theology and logic, but I didn't hear anything about the relationship with God. So all they're looking for is something.
Oliver has woken up and he's yelling for me.
Okay. Poor guy. So it's like, and I get it. Okay, nobody should hear me saying it doesn't make sense, because I mean, I think it does. Because I said the same shit. And I don't know, I just think that recognizing where it comes from. And I'm probably not saying anything new at all. Like, people are like, yes, Josh, you could stop droning on about this. Well, no, I can't, because I'm the only one here right now. So I have to drone on some more about it. But I do want to say this, just, you know, being open and transparent, particularly in light of my grandfather dying, and the experience that I had there. You know, if there's anybody out there that's a former evangelical or fundamentalist evangelical, and you still struggle from time to time with what if I'm wrong about this being wrong, you're not alone. There's so much guilt. I mean, it really, it does feel like it lines up with what I have seen in my experience about cult mentality. Like, it's so thoroughly ingrained that I still, when I was sitting there next to my grandfather, I mean, I'm just going to be open with you guys here. I prayed the next day. I was brushing my teeth. I remember it. And I was scared, frankly. And this is just how this works. It's shit. But I was thinking, okay, like, I don't feel any connection here like I used to feel when I prayed. But God, if you're out there, like, I want you to know I'm really, really trying to get at what's true. And I'm really sorry if I'm missing it. Like, please don't hold that against me. Like, that's what I was praying. And that stuff happens to me. Again, it happens less now. It has to, there's sort of events that bring it back. But it's hard. It's hard. So these comments about, like, you know, wait till you see when God comes and burns you or something. Like, that shit, there's a level where it's still kind of scary. So, you know, fuck you people.
I really hate to rush us wrapping up, but Oliver is asking for me to go and snuggle with him.
Okay.
Because he woke up and there was no one here and it was very scary.
Very scary.
Very scary.
All right.
The room that he sleeps in all the time.
Yeah.
But Josh, thank you for sharing that. I know it's tough. And you had several really lovely messages last week offering condolences about your grandfather, about you having to deal with all of the associated everythings.
I need to figure out how to look at our
Patreon
or whatever. I just need to figure out how to do that.
Send you the relevant information.
No boomer jokes, people.
No.
Or only three.
Only three. Thank you all for listening, though. And
definitely.
We'll be back next week. Oh, before I go, I have an interview tomorrow. That was the other thing I meant to say.
Yeah.
I have an interview tomorrow with Dr. Tero Alstola, who is an Assyriologist working in Helsinki. He's going to talk to us about his research, which is looking at migration and immigration, so the movement of people in ancient Mesopotamia. He's also going to be telling us about computer-aided research in Assyriology and about the big European Assyriological Conference happening this summer in Helsinki. So that's happening tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern. Please join us if you can. Bye.
Bye.